The Apostle Paul was inspired to write in 1 Corinthians 10:11 that examples in the Old Testament were written for our example and admonition on whom the end of the ages have come. Now, many accounts in the Old Testament are negative, and there are some positive examples as well. And the book of Daniel is one of those positive examples of faithfulness and obedience by Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so today I want to draw out and expound on some of the lessons that we should learn from the lives of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These four men lived their lives and were splendid examples of obedience and faithfulness. And the title that I've given this is Strive to Be a Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Strive to be a Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. All right, so turn back to the book of Daniel and put yourself a marker here, because we'll be going back and forth even to some other scriptures as we go. Starting out here in the first few verses of Daniel, we read there and in Jeremiah and other places that because of Judah's continuing disobedience, their Sabbath breaking and idolatry, God sent the Babylonians, he sent Nebuchadnezzar to begin to take over and take captive Jerusalem and Judah. And when Nebuchadnezzar captured Jerusalem, he took some of the vessels from the temple and took them to the house of his God in Shinar. And the policy that the Babylonians had was when they took over another country, they would pick out the best and the brightest, and they would train them to work as civil servants. And in verse 4, these were the kinds of people that they were looking for. Verse 4 of Daniel 1, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And so the king apportioned to them delicacies for them to eat and wine. And there were four of these young men, young teenagers, probably, from Judah that were chosen. Verse 6. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they wanted to get them away from Judah and from the religion of Judah, so they gave them Babylonian names. To them, verse 7, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and Azariah Abednego. Now, throughout the book of Daniel, Daniel is mostly called Daniel. But Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are mostly called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he was not going to be defiled with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So Daniel was a teenager or a young adult, as were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. One of the commentaries, and I looked at a bunch of commentaries about Daniel, and several of them say that Daniel is fiction, that Daniel didn't exist. Well, Jesus referred to Daniel in Matthew 24 in parallel scriptures about the abomination of desolation. And so he's mentioned also, I believe, back in the book of Ezekiel. So Daniel was real. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were real. And so they purposed in their heart that they were not going to defile themselves. Now, one reference in the commentary says Daniel was 12 years old. One of the elders in United believes that he was like 13 to 15 years old. And another elder said he was either a young adult or a teenager. So they were young. And you notice that the chief of the eunuchs is the one that looked after them. So probably, most likely, Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were castrated when they got to Babylon and made eunuchs. It seems to follow that that's what would have happened. And so God gave Daniel great favor in the eyes of the chief of the eunuchs in verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. The chief of the eunuchs had reservations about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego not eating the king's delicacies. He said, if you eat vegetables and water and don't eat the king's delicacies, and after a few days you don't look as good as the other trainees, he said, it's off with my head. He feared for his life. Nebuchadnezzar was an arrogant, vengeful despot. And as Daniel told Belshazzar later on with the handwriting on the wall, he said, whom he wished he kept alive, whom he wished he executed, whom he wished he held up, whom he wished he put down. And so these young men were captives in a foreign land and must have had some fear, some trepidation of what would happen to them in a foreign land. And so they would be trained for 3 years and given a daily provision then of the king's delicacies. And so Daniel purposed in his heart, verse 8, that he was not going to defile himself. And how might he have defiled himself? The king's delicacies may have been, probably were, offered to a pagan idol. Or they were unclean, or both. And so they did not want to defile themselves with something unclean or that had been sacrificed to a pagan god. And so they resolved in their hearts, he resolved in his heart that he was not going to do this. Well, the lessons for you and me is we need to resolve in our heart that we are going to obey God no matter what. No matter what comes, we are going to obey God. We ought not to have a backdoor route to escape just in case. I'll do the best I can for a while, but if it gets too bad, well, I'll go out the back door. And so God intervened, and he gave Daniel and his three friends favor. And Daniel proposed a test when the chief of the eunuchs expressed fear for his life if they didn't check out. And so Daniel said, let's do a test. Verse 12, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. So he did that. He gave them only vegetables and water for 10 days. And what were the results? Verse 15, and at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So they looked better. And so God was involved in all of this. He was involved in their selection. He was involved in their training. He was involved with the favor that Daniel and his three friends were given with the chief of the eunuchs. And so the easy mistake for you and me to make is to give ourselves the credit for the favor that God gives us instead of giving all the credit to God. When Daniel approached the chief eunuch, he did so tactfully, wisely, not in a challenging way, not in an argumentative way. And everything worked out. They looked better at the end of 10 days than those who ate the king's delicacies. And so God blessed them and gave them favor. Verse 17. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So now they finished their 3 years of training and they're brought in before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he interviewed them in verse 19. And among them, all none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. So God was involved in all of this. They may have wondered while they're being carted off to Babylon, what's going on? What's going to happen to us? How dangerous is it going to be? What's going to happen to our lives? So Daniel purposed in his heart that he was going to obey God. And he did so for all of his life. We, like Daniel, should purpose in our hearts that we're going to obey God as Daniel did, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. We should all set our minds, our hearts, and our will that come what may, we are going to obey God. Nebuchadnezzar, in verse chapter 2, had a dream that upset him so much that he couldn't go back to sleep that night. Plus, he forgot the dream. So Nebuchadnezzar summons all of his wise men, and he commands them to tell him what he had dreamed and to give him the interpretation. Well, that was a real stump they had run into. They said, you're asking what nobody's ever asked. They said, you tell us the dream, and we'll give you the interpretation. Well, notice how he reacted in verse 5 of Daniel 2. But the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces and your houses shall be made an ash heap. So they go back and forth with him and they try to buy some time, and He says down in verse 9, for you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time is changed. You're trying to buy time. And they kept going back and forth with him, and he said, that's it. Verse 12. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave a command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. See, this was a capricious, vengeful despot. I mean, he's just going to have them all killed. So the decree went out and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. So now Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, goes out and finds Daniel. And Daniel asks him what the rush is, and he tells him what the decree is. And Arioch allows Daniel to go in and ask Nebuchadnezzar if he'll give him some time so he can determine what the dream is and give him the interpretation. Now, some of the research. Here's a reference for what the captain of the king's guard was. Chief of the king's executioners, and I'm quoting, or slaughter men. Chief of the king's slaughter men. Chief of the butchers. That's who Arioch was. He that took off the heads of those whom the king ordered to be slain, because they had, in any case, displeased him. No law, no judge, no jury. The will or caprice of the king governed all things. So Nebuchadnezzar gives Daniel time to ask God to tell him what the dream was that Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed. It was time for Daniel to show some tact and wisdom to save his life and his three friends' lives. And so he goes back home and he tells Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego what the decree is. And you can imagine that they prayed some very effectual, fervent prayers that evening. And so that night, well, that they might seek, verse 18, mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So then, verse 19, the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And Daniel, you look throughout this whole book, Daniel gives God the credit and the thanks. You don't see him giving himself any credit at all. He gives God the credit. So then Daniel goes to Arioch and asks him to take him before Nebuchadnezzar, and he would tell the king the interpretation. So Arioch brings Daniel before King Nebuchadnezzar. And you notice here in Daniel's opening remarks, he's giving God the credit. In Daniel 2, beginning in verse 27. The king had said to Daniel in verse 26, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? And then so Daniel answers and said, the secret which a king has demanded the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secret, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. And then he explains the dream to him, how he had seen this tall image of a man whose head was of gold. In verse 31, he says it's a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. The image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and clay. So he saw this picture of a man, a head of gold, whom God revealed through Daniel that was Nebuchadnezzar, that he was the head of gold. The chest and arms were silver. And following Nebuchadnezzar's Babylonian empire was the Medo-Persian empire. And the belly and thighs were bronze, which was Alexander the Great and the Greco-Macedonian empire. And the legs of iron were the Roman Empire. And it was going to come and go and be revived several times until the end when Christ would return. And we need to follow Daniel's example in all of this and always give God all of the credit. Then, in verse 34, you watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. The iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff before the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And so this great image of metal then stands on feet of iron and clay that are partly strong and partly brittle. And of course, we believe and understand that the common market, the EU, is going to eventually end up being 10 nations that pictured by the 10 toes on these feet. And they're going to give their power to a beast who will be influenced by a false prophet. It says in verse 42, and as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. And if you look at the EU today, it is partly strong and partly fragile. You have all these different countries that speak a different language that have fought each other and killed each other through the centuries. And so they are partly strong and partly fragile. Their economic system with the pound is part of that weakness. It says, but they will not adhere to one another just as iron does not mix with clay in verse 43. And so in the days of those 10 kings, the toes of the feet, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom, verse 44, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. It's not ever going to go away. That seventh trumpet is going to sound when all of us who have been centuries and who've struggled, as Mr. Walmsley brought out, as the Apostle Paul struggled, we all want to hear that seventh trumpet sound and rise to meet Christ in the air, either as a resurrected saint or a live saint being changed from mortal to immortal. And we have to remain called, chosen, and faithful to be there when that seventh trumpet sounds. We have to stay deeply repentant for the rest of our lives to be there, to hear that well done, good and faithful servant. So Nebuchadnezzar's response was to fall down before Daniel and to give Daniel's God the credit. Instead of executing Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were all promoted to higher positions. God was involved and worked out all of these events for Daniel and his three friends. In a like manner, we should lean on, depend on, give God all the credit and thanks for blessing and the successes he works out for us. In Daniel 3, we come to the talled gold image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. And you can see in verse 1 of Daniel 3 that it was 60 cubits tall and width of 6 cubits. A cubit is different dimensions in the commentaries, but it's about 18 inches, let's say. So this statue was about 90 feet tall and about 9 feet wide. And King Nebuchadnezzar commanded all of the officials in his kingdom, in his empire, to come to the dedication of this tall image. And he commanded that when the band started to play, then everyone present would fall down and worship this golden image. And if they didn't, they'd be thrown immediately into a burning fire furnace. Life is desirable, but death in a burning fiery furnace was dreadful and horrible. And so when the music started, everyone fell down except for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The question is often asked, where was Daniel? Anything we say is supposition. He may have been off on empire business somewhere and not able to make it back. Maybe he had so much favor with Nebuchadnezzar that he didn't require him to attend because he knew he would not bow down to this image. There's no reason given in the scripture about where Daniel was. Well, the accusers, as the scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees were in Jesus' time. The Chaldeans came and told on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that they didn't bow down like you commanded. And so Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring these three before him. And let's see, that's in Daniel 3 and on over in. He gave them one more chance when they came before him. He said in verse 14, is it true? Daniel 3, 14. Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I've set up? And then he tells them that in effect he's going to give them one more chance if when the music starts to play. If they fall down, everything's good, but if they don't, they're going to be thrown in that you shall be cast, verse 15, immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And notice the challenge he lays before God there. And he says, and who is the God who will deliver you from my hand? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answer said, we don't have any need to answer you. If that is the case, verse 17, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, if he doesn't deliver us, if he allows us to burn up, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. No way. They weren't going to do it at the expense of their lives. And that's what it's going to come down to some of us, according to prophecies. There's a lot of martyrdom. There's protection promised, but there's also martyrdom promise. So are we going to respond like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did or not? So this, when they told Nebuchadnezzar that really set him off. Verse 19, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You can imagine that his veins stood out on his face and his face got red. And he commanded that they heat that furnace up 7 times hotter than it had been, and the mighty men to bind those three and to throw them in that furnace. And they had heated the fire up so much, the fire was flying out, and it even killed the mighty men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and threw them into the fire. And so they fell down, bound, into the midst of the burning fiery furnace in verse 23. And then Nebuchadnezzar saw something that shocked him. They threw three men bound into the fire, but he could see four walking around in the fire unharmed, unhurt. And so he says, look, verse 25, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. So God either sent an angel, or the Word who became Jesus Christ came down and delivered them. And so he called them to come out, and he called them servants of the Most High God. Come out and come here. And so they were amazed at how they didn't have anything burned. They didn't have the smell of fire on them. It's like they had been totally insulated from the fire. Have any of you ever sat around a campfire and you get too close and you burn the hair on your arm? It really stinks. These three men didn't even smell like their hair was singed. There was no smell on them. And so instead of burning them up, Nebuchadnezzar says in verse 28, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve or worship any god except their own. And so then he makes a decree that anybody that says anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in. Here's this arrogant despot again of a king. Cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then instead of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being burned up, they get promoted. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So when the persecution that I mentioned comes our way, if it does, are we going to be a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Or are we going to be like the rest of the officials there who bowed down? It'll be pleasing to God if we respond as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. Would you hand out the Babylon handout, please, Mr. Jackson? Nebuchadnezzar had another dream. It was his second dream. And this time, he relates the dream that he saw. He saw this big, tall tree that grew high and stretched to the heavens. And it provided food for all. The birds could roost in it and stay in it. The description is given along about verse Daniel 4, starting in verse 10. And then he sees a watcher come down from heaven, and the tree gets chopped down, totally chopped down. But what's left is a stump with a band around it. And that band is made of iron and bronze. You can read in verse 15. And one of the reasons I wanted to go through this particular dream was what verse 17 says. And that's something for all of us. Verse 17 of, of Daniel 4, this decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. God is in charge. God is in charge. And so the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will. That's also repeated in verse 25 toward the end, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. And Daniel repeated the same statement to Belshazzar after the handwriting on the wall in Daniel 5:21. The Old Testament statement about the Most High ruling in the kingdom of men, hold your place there in Daniel 4 and go to Romans 13. Romans, the 13th chapter. Starting in verse 1 of Romans 13. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. In verse 4, it says, for he is God's minister to you for good, but if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake, for because of this you also pay taxes. I had a good Amoco friend in Tulsa that thought that paying income tax was unconstitutional, and so he was going to decide he wasn't going to pay income tax anymore. And I told him, well, you just go ahead and do that, and I'll come visit you in prison. Render therefore to all their due taxes, to whom taxes are due, custom to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Nebuchadnezzar's problem is given in verse 27 of Daniel 4. Daniel told the king, therefore, king, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. Nebuchadnezzar attributed his fame, his power, his success in war, and his prosperity to his own prowess. He gave himself the credit. Nebuchadnezzar had made Babylon the greatest city of the world. Take your hand out, if you will. Babylon was laid out in a square. It was about 56 miles, 14 miles on the side, and the Euphrates River went right down through the center of the city. So half of Babylon is on one side of the river, half on the other. You can see that in the picture. You're looking at the eastern half of the city in the picture here at the top of the page. And here's the Euphrates River. There you can see flowing, and they have a walkway, a paved walkway across it there. There was also a swinging gate where they could have have boats go down it too. Look at down toward the bottom of the page. Among the cities that Nebuchadnezzar invaded and plundered were Tyre, Moab, Ammon, Edom, and Jerusalem. And what follows below, it comes from Herodotus, Book 1, 178 to 86, about Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. Some of the scholars dispute some of these numbers that Herodotus gave. So, as I mentioned, Babylon was in the form of a square, was 14 miles on each side. It was a huge city. I mentioned that the Euphrates River, page 2, flowed down through the middle of the city, and of course it had walls all around it. There were ferry boats and a half-mile-long bridge with drawbridges that closed at night, you see there. There were the hanging gardens that Nebuchadnezzar built. I read a book way back as a kid, a teenager, of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And the hanging gardens of Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar built were one of those seven wonders of the ancient world. The streets were paved with stone slabs that were 3 feet square. And they had all of these great temples, and there was gold everywhere. You'll see there that there was a golden image of Baal, and the golden table that weighed over 50,000 pounds of solid gold. There in one spot, 50,000 pounds of solid gold. I went to Google this morning. I looked up what the price of gold is today. It was $1,206.45 per ounce. If you multiply that by 16 ounces per pound by 50,000, you get that table and image of Baal was worth, in today's gold dollars, $965,160,000 U.S. Almost $1 billion worth of gold there in a pagan statue and table. So Babylon was a fantastic, rich city. It was a wealthy city, and Nebuchadnezzar gave himself the credit for a lot of that. You can see that in these pictures that it had two walls around it. Well, some of the reading that I did said that Nebuchadnezzar added a third wall on the outside of those two. And Herodotus said it was 300 or 400 feet tall. You can see the numbers there. But it had a passageway on the top of the wall, a road where 2 4-horse chariots could meet or travel side by side, or one of those 4-horse chariots could turn around on this top of this wall on the road that was on top of it. I mean, it was a fantastic city that they thought was impregnable. They thought it was impregnable. All of the bricks, here's what one of the references said. All of the bricks and stones of Babylon examined by archaeologists to date have inscribed upon them the name of Nebuchadnezzar. He gave himself the credit. Nebuchadnezzar needed to be humble. He needed to see that his kingship and all of his blessings came from God. Nebuchadnezzar didn't heed Daniel's warning here in verse 27. And the whole prophecy came to pass. It all came to pass in verse 28 of Daniel 4. All this came upon Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the 12 months. He was walking about in the royal palace of Babylon, and he started giving himself credit for all the wonders and riches that he saw. The king spoke, saying, verse 30, Daniel 4, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you." See, what Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed was that he was going to go out for 7 times and eat grass with the oxen, hair be wet with dew, and his nails grow long. "And they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. And 7 times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he chooses." See, that's the third time. I think I said 3 times, but it's 4 times it's there. And so that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Nebuchadnezzar's problem was pride and being lifted up in spirit. That's what Daniel told Belshazzar in Daniel 5 when he was giving Belshazzar a dressing down about what he had done. Hold your place there and turn to Proverbs, the 6th chapter. Turn to Proverbs 6. You can see here what God hates and is an abomination to him. Hold your place. Proverbs 6, beginning in verse 16. "These 6 things the Lord hates." Yes, 7 are an abomination to him. And what's number 1 on the list? A proud look. And Nebuchadnezzar had a proud look and a proud spirit. And he didn't give God the credit. And so God knocked him down. He was insane for 7 years. And he goes on to add, "A lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devised wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren." But first on the list is a proud look. So we all need to beseech God to help us to root out any pride or a lifted up spirit and help us be more humble and filled with humility. And may God help us all to give God all the credit instead of ourselves. Belshazzar saw the handwriting on the wall in Daniel, the 5th chapter. He threw a big celebration, a great feast in verse 1 of Daniel 5. "For 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. And while he's probably light of head with wine, he has the gold and silver vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple brought in, and he and his lords and his wives and his concubines drank wine from those vessels and praised the gods of gold and silver. Bronze and iron, wood and stone," you read in verse 4. And so God sent a hand that wrote on the wall. And none of the king's wise men could give him an interpretation. And so then the queen remembered Daniel and suggested Daniel be brought in. And so Daniel is brought in, And Belshazzar tells him if he can give the interpretation of the handwriting on the wall, that he'll be rewarded greatly and he'll be made the third ruler in the kingdom. And Daniel told him he could keep his gifts for himself. But he said, I'll read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. In verse 17. And then he tells him that the Most High God, verse 18, gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory, and honor. In verse 18. And he told him, because of the majesty, verse 19, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. He took the head off. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But then he tells Belshazzar what Nebuchadnezzar's problem was. But when his heart, verse 20, was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from the kingly throne and they took his glory from him. And so he was out there with the animals for 7 years. Till, verse 21, last part, he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and points over it whomever he chooses. But you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart. Although you knew all this, what Belshazzar did was a real affront to God. For him to take the holy vessels that had been taken out of the temple and to drink wine and praise his pagan gods with his lords, his wives, his concubine. You have not humbled your heart, although you knew all of this. You knew what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. You knew he went insane for 7 years. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you. And you and your lords and wives, your concubines, have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. And so then the fingers of the hand wrote, Meeny, meeny, tekel, upharsin. Meeny, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. And so then Belshazzar goes ahead and rewards Daniel. And made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And what happened to Belshazzar that very night? That very night, verse 30, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain and Darius the Mede received the kingdom being about 62 years old. How did it happen? Well, Cyrus's army, if you look at this sketch again, they diverted the Euphrates River, part of it, into a marsh upstream of Babylon until the water was about waist deep. And so Cyrus's soldiers waded in the river. Now here's Belshazzar and all of his lords. They think Babylon is impregnable. It's got all these huge walls around it. And they got food and they got water. They can withstand a siege for months. So there was nobody watching. If they had had some guards watching when those soldiers are marching down this river, they could have closed all the gates and they would have picked them off with bows and arrows like rats. Easily. They would have wiped them all out. So they lowered the river down to where they could wade in the river, and they went through some of these open gates into the city, open the big gates, the army goes in and wipes out the city, and Belshazzar was slain that very, very night. So the reminder to us is to take very seriously God's way, His commandments, what He considers important. Don't be flippant and affront God as Belshazzar did. Don't have any other gods except the true God. Be careful to keep the Sabbath. Our pastor, Mr. Ed Dowd, has been concentrating on the Sabbath lately. And in one of his recent writings, he stated, "Turn our feet to keeping the Sabbath rather than turning away our feet from keeping the Sabbath to what we please." And that's a takeoff on Isaiah 58:13. Turn our feet to keeping the Sabbath rather than turning away our feet from keeping the Sabbath to what we please. It is the holy Sabbath day, and we need to remember it and keep it that way. In Daniel 6, there's a plot against Daniel when Darius the Mede was king. Daniel distinguished himself very much. You can read in verse 1 that King Darius set 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and he put three governors over those, and then he had thought of making Daniel over all. Verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the kingdom king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. He was going to put him in charge of everything. But you see, his accusers couldn't have that. And so they looked for something that they could accuse Daniel of. But verse 4, they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel exemplified an exemplary character. Here are people looking for some reason to be able to throw a rock at him, accuse him of some evil, and they can't find anything. May God help us all to have that same reputation among our friends and family and neighbors. And so they say, "Well, we don't have anything against him, but we shall not find any charge against his Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So they knew Daniel was a praying man. And so they go and kiss up to the king. And they say, "We have a decree that we want you to make, that if anyone prays to a god or another man except you for 30 days, he'll be cast in to the lion's den." And so part of what they told him was a lie, because in verse 7, they say, "All the governors of the kingdom." Of course, that didn't include Daniel, so that was untruthful. So the king's ego is revved up. And so he passes it. And so they had a stupid policy, it seems. Verse 8, latter part, that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not change. So King Darius signed the written decree. What does Daniel do? When he knows it's been signed, he goes home. He opens the window facing Jerusalem, and he gets down on his knees and he prays three times a day. Now that took some guts. One of the commentaries said what the Jews did when they were in captivity is they had a real love for Jerusalem and a love for the temple. And so they would open the window facing Jerusalem and they would pray. And of course, eventually they would pray for the health and well-being and restoration of the temple and of Jerusalem and Israel. And so guess what? His detractors are outside listening. And so they go and tell the king. And then the king knows he's been had. He knows he's been had. Verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, when they told on Daniel, was greatly displeased with himself, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. He tried every way he could think of to deliver Daniel from being thrown in the lion's den. And so they came and reminded him that he had made a decree that couldn't be changed. And so, verse 16, they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. And so the king goes back and he can't sleep that night. And he doesn't have any musicians brought before him in verse 18. Couldn't sleep. So he goes early to the next morning and calls out to Daniel. Daniel, servant of the living God, verse 20, has your God whom you serve continually been able to deliver you from the lions? And so Daniel answers. And so God had sent an angel. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so they've not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. And so God shut those lions' mouths and didn't allow them to harm Daniel. And the king was exceedingly glad in verse 23. And there wasn't any injury, whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Things didn't work out so good for those who had accused Daniel. The king gave the command, and they brought those who had accused Daniel and cast them into the den of lions. The detractors, the accusers, their wives, their children, threw them all into the lion's den, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the pit. So Daniel was unhurt by the lions, and the accusers didn't have a very good end. And then King Darius sent out a decree which gave credit to God for who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions in verse 27. In a couple of chapters over, in Daniel 9, is a prayer that Daniel prayed. And it's a real example of a prayer and supplication for us to follow. If you take the time to read down through this prayer, you'll see that Daniel was very humble and very repentant. He said in verse 3, then I set my face toward the Lord God to make requests by prayer and supplication with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. And you notice that he includes himself. Here he is, a captive in Babylon. He's understood from reading Jeremiah that the Jews are going to be held for 70 years, and then some of them will go back. He says, verse 5, we have sinned and committed iniquity. He includes himself. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgments. Down in verse 7, you have driven them because of the unfaithfulness which they have committed against you. Verse 8, O Lord, to us belongs shame of face, to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, because we have sinned against you. We have sinned against you. Remember the struggle that Mr. Walmsley mentioned that the Apostle Paul had? The Apostle Paul had the same struggles that all of us have, that the children of Israel had, that Daniel had, because we have sinned against you. The latter part of verse 9 says, we have rebelled against him. They committed idolatry. They committed Sabbath breaking. Latter part of verse 11, because we have sinned against him. And then Daniel implores God to intervene and to act. He says in verse 18, O my God, incline your ear and hear, open. He says in verse 19, O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and act. Do not delay for your own sake, my God, for your city and your people are called by your name. And so God sent the archangel Gabriel, and he ends up giving him the 70 weeks prophecy. He says in verse 22, O Daniel, I have now come forth to give you skill to understand. At the beginning of your supplications, the command went out, and I have come to tell you, for you are greatly beloved. What a tribute to Daniel. You are greatly beloved. Won't it be great for God to say that to us, or he feels that way about us? You are greatly beloved. Enter you into the joy of your Lord. And so he gives him the 70 weeks prophecy. And so we all would do well to follow Daniel's example of humility and repentance. In Daniel, the 10th chapter, Daniel had a vision by the Tigris River during the third year of Cyrus. And he's fasting for 3 weeks. And then after 3 weeks, an angel appears to him. And in verse 11, he says, O Daniel, man greatly beloved. See, several times in the book of Daniel, it's referred to Daniel as being greatly beloved. That's Daniel 10, verse 11. And so it was 3 weeks since Daniel started praying. Why did it take this angel that long? Verse 12, he says, Do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. Why was there a delay? 3 weeks. Verse 13, But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, 3 weeks. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Plural, kings of Persia. So it appears that there are false angels, demonic angels, that have oversight of the Gentile nations, and good angel Michael has oversight over Israel. Hold your place there. Turn a page or two. Daniel 12:1. At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And so Daniel is one of those good archangels, and he's standing watch over Israel. Now, you see, what he goes on to say in verse 20 of Daniel 10, Do you know why I've come to you, and now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia? And when I have gone forth, indeed, the prince of Greece will come. These are false demonic angels. But I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one opposed me except these, except Michael, your prince. Finally, in chapter 12, Daniel was informed that the words of his book would be sealed until the time of the end. And then Daniel was finally promised an inheritance at the end of the days.
Daniel 12, verse 4. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Down to verse 8. Although I heard, speaking of Daniel, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. Verse 10, many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But the wise shall understand. And then down in verse 13, but you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will rise to your inheritance at the end of the days when that seventh trump sounds and God resurrects all the dead saints and changes from mortal to immortal all the live saints and says, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter you into the joy of your Lord.